I'm Michelle Martin, and you're listening to Tell Me More from NPR News. It's time for our weekly visit to the barbershop, where the guys talk about what's in the news and whatever's on their minds. Sitting in the chairs for a shape-up this week are freelance writer Jimmy Israel, civil rights attorney and editor Arsalan Iftikhar, syndicated columnist Ruben Navarrete, and Justin Ross of the Maryland House of Delegates. I may jump in once or twice, but for now, take it away, Jimmy.
Thanks, Michelle. Hey, yo, fellas, what's up? Welcome to the shop.
What's going on, Jimmy? How you doing, buddy?
How you doing?
Oh, man, I'm bad because John Edwards apparently did not take my grandmother's advice about getting your play and your paycheck in two different places. Homeboy admits to an affair with videographer Rael Hunter. We got some tape around here, right?
I think so. If you guys want to hear, if you were like the 18 people to watch the interview with John Edwards, which took place at the same time as the opening ceremony of the Olympics. Coincidence? Coincidence? Yeah. Think not. But here it is. He was interviewed on ABC News by Bob Woodruff.
In 2006, 2 years ago, I made a very serious mistake. Told Elizabeth about the mistake. Asked her for her forgiveness. Asked God for his forgiveness. And we have kept this within our family since that time.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Man, oh, man. My heart really goes out to Mrs. Edwards. You know, a bit of information about Rael Hunter. She's credited with being among the first people to start using YouTube as a political device. And for all you movie fans, she played a reporter in Denzel Washington's classic Ricochet, according to IMDb.com. His wife, man. She said
now,
she
that's,
stayed.
That's the ugly.
Go ahead.
Yeah, that's
it.
The uglier part of it, for sure. That's the part that creeps you out, the fact that, you know, to cheat on your wife when she has cancer, incurable breast cancer, even if you want to sympathize with the guy, this is crossing a line that ought not be crossed.
Right.
And at the same time, you know, this really points to a lot of what bothered people about Edwards. He's a phony. This guy is liar, liar, pants on fire. Everything about his apology was not contrite. It was not sincere. It was all sort of, how do I survive this politically? And it's a lesson that, you know, if you lie to your wife and you lie to your spouse, chances are you're also lying to me as a voter about what you're going to do if you were elected president. And so in that respect, it was a disappointing scandal, but not altogether a surprising one.
Can I ask? I wanted to ask Justin, obviously, I think we're going the same direction, because Justin, you're in politics. And is this the kind of thing where you go home and your wife is looking at you cross-eyed thinking, okay, buddy, you got anything to tell me?
My wife looks at me cross-eyed every day for 100 different reasons, but not ever this one.
Right.
You know, it's totally upsetting, and obviously I agree with everyone, it's terrible. Again, I'm not surprised either, but he is a man who made a terrible mistake, and politicians are no different from bankers or priests or anybody else who make lots of mistakes. And he is I absolutely positively do not condone what he did. And I also just want to say thank goodness that the voters in the Democratic primary did not make this guy our nominee. Could you imagine now what we would be dealing with going into a week next week at the Democratic convention? But I mean,
here's what's different about politics, though, is the 24/7 environment. You start to think you're in this bubble, right, and that, you know, he talked about that, and it's not an excuse, but there's this 24/7 environment. I mean, Justin, when you're at the legislature meets for what, like 90 days every year, and you're there 24/7 hanging around with the same people. A lot of people don't go home because the days are so long in the middle of the session. This is not an excuse, but does that ring true to you?
In the wise words of Chris Rock, I don't agree, but I understand. You know what I mean? I understand that if you allow yourself to become the center of your own universe and you don't put something else that's much bigger as the center of your life, whether it be God or your family or whatever, then you can fall victim to the same thing that everyone else feels like when these things happen, which is, man, I am kind of special. Mm. You know, people say, inside the beltway, but out of the loop. You know, there is something to be said for this this bubble that people live in politics. And in my faith, we have to be forgiving of the guy, and I take him at his word. I'm going to forgive him. But it's obviously, totally.
Oh, forget that.
Another famous Chris Rock quote about fidelity is that men are only as faithful as their options. I'm wondering, like many people are wondering, is this political life over? A-Train.
Well, yeah, it's over. And I think the greater issue here also is from a journalistic perspective. You know, here we have the National Enquirer, a tabloid newspaper that's been running this right. story for months. And I think, you know, what we have to understand now is that we're going to get into an age, I believe, where you're going to see mainstream publications, mainstream media outlets run with rumors because of the fact that they weren't able to, you know, verify the veracity of the story here. And I think now what you're going to see a lot of mainstream media outlets do is jump on quote-unquote stories that might not have any truth or veracity because of the Edwards phenomenon.
You know what? I don't know if I agree. I tell you why. I can understand why you feel that way and why you're concerned about that. But I think responsible news outlets are still going to do what they're going to do, which is to vet these things appropriately and make decisions about whether it's time to publish them or not, or broadcast them or not. And irresponsible tabloid-oriented media outlets are going to keep doing what they've been doing, yeah. which is to publish rumors. Here's the question I have, and I think this is also the nexus of journalism and politics, which is, do you really care? I mean, on a personal level, you care. It's terrible, but do you really care? Because I'm interested in whether he was a serious candidate for vice president.
That's the
big
exactly.
kahuna right now.
I don't care. I don't care on a political level. I care on a personal level, but not on a political level, because I think that this was somebody who was out of the spotlight. This was somebody who, you know, at best was going to be considered for a top job, like attorney general or something like
that.
But
that's a big job, though.
It's a big deal, but it's not exactly, you know, you're the Democratic presidential nominee. So I get that. You know, it reflects badly on him as an individual. This is somebody who used his wife to try to get an upper hand on Barack Obama and Hillary mm-hmm. Clinton and say, I'm the one with the cancer-stricken wife, and I'm posing next to her, and I'm doing interviews with her, and this all reflects well on me because I'm such a good person. And you got to be careful what you're using to build your house, because people come back and then say, hey, wait a minute, maybe you don't have that perfect home life that you portrayed it to be.
You know what, Ruben? That's hard, but it's fair. All right. Well, keeping it moving.
Well, can I ask Jimmy before you let it go? I was just curious, Jimmy, what you think about this.
You know what? I think that if his wife forgives, you know what? So will the nation. And I don't know that he'll be president. But I don't think his political life is over. I think people will ultimately forgive him. That's what I believe.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to Tell Me More from NPR News. I'm speaking with Jimmy Israel, Arsalan Iftikhar, Ruben Navarrete, and Justin Ross in the barbershop. Back to you, Jimmy.
Thanks, Michelle. Robert Downey Jr., my dude, is playing a dude, playing a black dude. Did you follow that? In a movie called Tropic Thunder, co-written by Ben Stiller. Coming to a theater near you. I think we got some tape, huh?
I haven't seen the movie. Justin, maybe. I think you saw it. But here's a clip of Downey's character in blackface talking about the Jeffersons theme song to the character who actually is black.
Al Pacino.
You want to hear that? Yeah. Okay, here it is.
Took a lot of trying just to get up that hill. Now we up in the big league.
That's the theme song for the Jeffersons.
Ain't nothing wrong with that.
You out of your mind.
What?
You really need help.
And just because the theme song don't make it not true.
Well, there you have it.
Thank you very much. Robert Downey Jr. in the role of Kirk Lazarus, a Australian actor trying to play up his black guy chops. Yo, A-Train, start us off, man. I mean, I'm a big fan of art over PC-ness, and I co-sign Robert Downey Jr.'s right to take this acting challenge. What about you?
You know, my wife and I were debating last night whether to go see the movie on opening night, and we decided not to for several reasons. But I think, you know, with the whole blackface thing, I think it will only desensitize us to future depictions of blackface. I think that, you know, if you're going to have a movie about narcissistic Hollywood actors, you could get that point across without having to resort to, you know, old tropes like blackface. And I think that that really, in my opinion, is again going to desensitize future depictions, because people are going to say, well, Robert Downey Jr. did it in Tropic Thunder, so it's all right for us to do it in this
Wait a second. Do we all agree that it was blackface?
No, absolutely not. No. I saw it.
Yeah, I think we
just
did.
I don't think that's a, I mean,
what's up, man? What do you think?
You know, you can say whether or not it was a good thing, but that's not what it was. He looked like, I mean, he was dressed up in, and he had the makeup, and I mean, it looked like he was African-American sergeant. I mean, that's what it was.
The point was to show it wasn't blackface in the sense of like the cork. It was to show how far he was willing to go to be in this movie.
Right, exactly.
So, yeah, all right, take it, man.
It's the context, because, I mean, the way Stiller wrote this script, kind of interestingly, is an actor, a bunch of actors, right? They get caught up in a war. And so this guy is an actor who's, I guess, what, Australian, who's pretending to be African-American in another movie, can't even get out of the role now and can't get rid of it. So they're making fun of that whole thing. I think that's a long way removed from making fun of black people. And I think that you got to pick your battles. This is not one I think we should be picking.
What about the whole issue around making fun of people with disabilities? What do you think about that?
Yeah, I hadn't heard that until this morning after I saw the movie. And yeah, that was definitely way more. I mean, that honestly, that was way more offensive I want to say that I saw this movie in Hyattsville, Maryland, with a theater full of black folks who laughed as hard as I've ever heard anybody laugh at this movie. I just want to say that. I mean, it didn't sound like anyone was offended by Robert Downey Jr. last night. And the other point about that is just that there's another African-American character who throughout the movie is calling him out on how stupid he's acting. And that was sort of, you know, I think that was sort of an important point too. You know, I heard somebody from Mr. Shriver and Special Olympics are coming out against
Timothy
it.
Mr. Shriver saying people should boycott it. He's saying you should not see this, that this validates that kind of ridiculing people with disabilities.
We cannot, cannot have people's politics interfering with the art. We can't do it. Leave it alone. I'm telling you, whatever your politics are, whatever offends you, if it offends you,
don't
go see the film. Well, don't read the book. Don't pick up the magazine, because I'm telling you, it's like Baldwin said, James Baldwin, the author. He said, you know what? They're going to go for them in the day, but they're going to come for you in the night. And believe it. Believe it. You're sitting there trying to quash other people's rights to speak freely and to express their art. But next thing you know, somebody's going to be...
But why don't people have a right to encourage other people not to see it because it's offensive and hurtful?
Isn't that the whole point? You got any right you want. I think it's a waste of time.
No, it's not. I mean, it's free speech versus...
It's not your time.
It's free speech versus free speech.
One other thing for the movie I want to say is that there's also another piece that's sort of an important part of the movie of the other African-American actor who's continually sort of promoting his energy drink.
Al Pacino?
Al Pacino, is in it, and it's called Booty Sweat. I mean...
Oh, no.
I'm just saying, why on earth are we... You know what I mean? Like, that to me seems like a far more offensive... piece, but I haven't heard a peep out of that, right?
So where are you on this? At the end of the day, if you had known it was going to be as rugged on some of these other issues, you heard about the blackface thing in advance, but you hadn't heard about the other stuff. If you'd heard it, do you think you still would have gone?
Yep. I'm not going to lie. I mean, honestly, that movie was
funny.
And you could look at my voting record and see where I am on the issues. That movie's funny, straight up. I'm not going to lie. It's fine.
All right.
Jimmy, go ahead. What else you want to talk
for
about?
For me, outrage has become its own own vocation, and it's become like a cheap way to get on TV. But in America, that's what makes this country great. You can be outraged. So it's on and cracking. Let's keep it moving. Blender Magazine takes a look at the musical taste of the presidential candidates. Now, Barack Obama's top four. Number four, Gimme Shelter by the Rolling Stones, I'm on Fire by Bruce Springsteen, What's Going On by Marvin Gaye, and number one was Ready or Not by the Fugees, John McCain, top four. If We Make It Through December, Merle Haggard, Take a Chance on Me, ABBA, that great Swedish import on the disco tip. Blue Bayou by Roy
Orbison. It's actually
also
the theme of his campaign, by the way. Take a chance on that.
Oh, snap.
And number one, Dancing Queen. ABBA strangely reappears. I don't know what's going on with that. I'm as much a fan of ABBA as the next brother, but I'm telling you, there wouldn't be two of them in my top 10. I mean, that's real. That's deep. That's really deep.
Two in the top four.
Top four. Do we think that this list gives any insight into their personalities?
Absolutely.
Let's start with Just Blaze.
Yeah, look, Barack's got two hip hop songs on the top 10, but I got to definitely. If I wasn't going to vote for him anyway, and I definitely was, the fact that he had Fugees as number one, that solidified it. I'm done. That's it. I'm voting for him.
You know what though? For me, that told me he wasn't really a hip hop fan.
I'm sorry.
Now, if he had Audio 2 Top Billing or like MC Shan or something like that, then I'd be like, okay. But see, to me, Fugees is the safest, softest,
saccharine.
So yeah, hold on. Hip hop choice.
Hurt him, could, please. Take him down.
Man, if Lauryn Hill L. Boogs was here right now, she would just throw a big whatever to what you said. She'd be defecated on your microphone.
Rohan turned around a little bit, so she doesn't have all the facilities, but we're not going quite there. I mean, what I'm wondering is,
give me a second. I got to whip out my hip hop dictionary. Understand what you're talking about. Hold on.
Ruben, go ahead, A-Train.
Well, I think for me, it just showed the generational difference. You know, you had Nina Simone, Kanye, and Will.i.am from Barack Obama, and then you had ABBA, Merle Haggard, Beach Boys, and Sinatra, and Neil Diamond.
He's Sinatra on one. Obama has a Sinatra pick. Am I right? Yes, he does.
Because Obama's trying to broaden out beyond the generation. Look, he also had Rolling Stones. He had the Rolling Stones. That's an obvious play for the boomers.
And the thing is, you know, I don't think most people under the age of 30 would know who Merle Haggard is, you know, if their life depended on it.
Well, Obama has You'd Be So Easy to
Mess with Merle.
Frank Sinatra on his top 10.
And he has You Too. So, I mean, again, I think it's a generational thing more than anything.
Yeah, there's a lot of stuff there, but...
I bet Barack got Wheezy on his iPod.
I mean, this is another reason why, me personally, I could never run for president, because I wouldn't want to talk to people about what I'm listening to. I think it's none of their business.
I mean, if you look, I mean,
okay,
I know, like
I'm with Michelle. I like my privacy too. I don't want everybody knowing
you know
what I do.
That's
why
people,
I go on the radio.
That's because you have ABBA on your playlist.
You know what? You know what?
That's why I go on the radio. Keep it all private.
Here's what I think. Here's what I think. I am whatever you say I am, and if I wasn't, then why would I say I am? Mm-hmm. And with that, I got to call it a wrap. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much for coming to the barbershop. I got to kick it over to the lady of the house, Michelle Martin.
What's on your iPod, Jimmy?
Right about now?
You know,
actually,
you have...
Marvin Gaye. Yeah, Marvin Gaye. Mm-hmm.
Sure. You know you got Pink up in there. He's got Pink.
Yeah, no
doubt. I'm not even...
I was just glad Ghostface Killer wasn't on this list. I thought it would have been hard to explain to
on whose
white America.
Side? On whose list?
Well, actually, yeah, I would have preferred it to be on John McCain.
Yeah, Wu-Tang on John McCain's? Come on now.
Sorrow.
Jimmy Israel is a freelance writer who blogs for TV One Online and TheRoot.com. He joined us from WCPN in Cleveland. Ruben Navarrete writes for the San Diego Union-Tribune and CNN.com. He joined us from San Diego. Arsalan Iftikhar is a contributing editor for Islamica magazine and a civil rights attorney. He joined us in our Washington studio along with Justin Ross, a Democratic Maryland state delegate. Gentlemen, thank you so much for joining us.
Peace.
I'm out.
Thank you. Hey.
Yep, yep.
That's our program for today. Tell Me More is produced by Bracton Booker, Monica Ifstatieva, Jasmine Garst, Irva Gunja, Lee Hill, Douglas Hopper, Arjun Hutchins, Wendy Johnson, Jennifer Longmire, Veronica Miller, and Katerina Valdivieso. Our planning editor is Alicia Montgomery, with assistance from Denise Rios. Our line editor is Lori Grant. Our summer intern, Kristen Lee, wrapped up her assignment with us this week. Bye, Kristen. Don't forget to write. The program is directed by Rob Sachs. Our technical director is Ivan Burkett, with assistance from Kurt Stoniker. Our theme music was composed by Underdog Entertainment, with additional arrangements by Ian Honeyman. The supervising senior producer is Tashima Walker. The executive producer is Marie Nelson. I'm Michelle Martin, and you've been listening to Tell Me More from NPR News and the African American Public Radio Consortium. Let's talk more on Monday.